Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Mind Over Murder podcast.
My name is Bill Thomas. I'm a writer, consulting producer, and now podcaster. I am now trying to use my experience as the brother of a murder victim to help other victims of violent crime. I'm working on a book on the unsolved Colonial Parkway murders, and I'm the co-administrator of the Colonial Parkway Murders Facebook group, together with Kristen Dilley.
My name is Kristen Dilley. I'm a writer, a researcher, a teacher, and a victim's advocate, as well as the social media manager and co-administrator for the Colonial Parkway Murders Facebook page with my partner in crime, Bill Thomas. Welcome to Mind Over Murder. I'm Kristen Dilley.
And I'm Bill Thomas.
And welcome to another episode of True Crime News Roundup. I believe this is our second True Crime News Roundup of recent. Is that right?
It is. You are correct. It's our, I think, our first one with my cold. I'm trying desperately to get rid of this cold, but this will be our attempt, my attempt, at recording a True Crime News Roundup mid cold.
You sound a lot better than you did a couple of days ago. A couple of days ago, it was like, oh man, this is terrible. I'm so sorry.
I know. It's not my finest hour. What can I say?
There's a marked change in the quality of your voice when you have a cold. I'm the idiot who sounds so bad normally that there is no appreciable difference in my voice when I have a cold and when I don't.
You sound fine. And you certainly sound a lot better than I do.
I remember at one point when I worked with the public at one of my many customer service jobs over the years, and some, I'm sure, very well-meaning woman when I was working at a bookstore came over to me and she was asking me questions about books, and I'm responding to them. She goes, "Do you sound like that all the time, dear?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And she goes, "Is it allergies?" And I said, "No, ma'am, this is just how I sound."
I don't think that's very complimentary.
No, it wasn't, but it's, yeah, definitely not everyone is 100% fan of my Katharine Hepburn-esque, but not really, voice. I'm somewhere between Katharine Hepburn and Lauren Bacall, maybe. Not Tallulah Bankhead, but...
Those are not bad places. I like your voice just fine.
We are collecting some of the most interesting stories that have come up in true crime over the last 2 weeks, and we wanted to go ahead and present them. We know that everybody has loved reporting on the Idaho 4. Sadly, there is no Idaho 4 news for this week other than the occasional magazine that is still trying to find some interesting new angle. I saw one that said, "Brian Koberger watches media about himself in his cell all the time." It's okay. I don't know why that was worth reporting, but all right.
Yeah, he doesn't have anything better to do. If he's not meeting with his lawyers, he probably has plenty of time.
Unfortunately, no new Idaho 4 news other than the fact that Brian Koberger watches all of his press at all times, apparently.
He's got more time on his hands than we do.
Absolutely. I do want to start with a story that, as soon as I heard it, I sent it to you first. This is what happens with all true crime news that crosses my radar. I immediately send it to Bill. And this one really sent a shiver down my spine because it is so reminiscent of something that we reported on when we first started the podcast, actually. Fort Hood is back in the news again, 3 years after the murder of Vanessa Guillen, which we covered extensively. So Private Ana Basildua Ruiz age 20, a combat engineer, died on base on Monday, March 13th. Manner and cause of death have not been released, but according to CID, the Criminal Investigative Division of the Army, quote, at this point in the investigation into the death of Private Ana Basildua Ruiz, no foul play is evident and will remain under investigation. Is this the part where we roll our eyes together?
Keep going, and there's more, and I think at that point we're into full eye-rolling territory.
According to Private Ana's parents, she was being sexually harassed by other service members, including one of her superiors. To that point, CID said, quote, information related to any possible harassment will be addressed and investigated.
This is the part where I roll my eyes, because this sounds exactly like Vanessa Guillen, and it's here it is 3 years on. She reported to her parents that she was being sexually harassed by a senior officer, and then she is found dead on base. The Army Criminal Investigation Division, CID, says there's no evidence of foul play. Are they claiming that she's a suicide? And even if she is a suicide, we can't overlook the fact that she's already reported to her family that she's being sexually harassed, just like Vanessa Guillen was.
Of course, this is of major concern to anybody who did follow Vanessa Guillen's case. And we do have some reporting from NBC News, particularly with regard to a press conference held by the League of United Latin American Citizens, LULAC, L-U-L-A-C. They held a press conference on Friday, March 17th, actually right at the gate of Fort Hood, and they demanded an FBI investigation into Private Ana's death. Quote, for the Army to say no foul play presumes facts that have not yet been brought forth. For the Army to say no foul play would also indicate a tone deafness to the concerns of the father and mother of Ana Fernanda Basildua Ruiz, who stated that she had been the target of alleged sexual harassment, repeated and consistent sexual harassment by other service members up to and including an immediate superior to whom she reported, end quote.
There's a lot to unpack here, but it's very clear that for the CID to make claims that there is no foul play and that they will look into the sexual harassment allegations, I'm really skeptical here. When Vanessa Guillen was murdered in April 2020, which is now just shy of 3 years ago, Fort Hood was clearly indicated to be a very problematic base. And this has been going on at this base for years.
Yes.
And there's something wrong here. There's a culture that allows senior officers to feel that they can harass women and men, perhaps, with impunity. There's something really foul going on at Fort Hood.
When the investigation into Fort Hood ultimately occurred, 14 base leaders were ultimately removed from Fort Hood because they allowed, among other things, a permissive environment for sexual assault and sexual harassment. And that is also a quote from that inquiry. But yeah, there is definitely something going on at Fort Hood. And even though it removed 14 base leaders, it sounds like maybe not a whole lot has changed since then.
If I were a parent and my son or daughter was assigned to Fort Hood, I'd be thinking to myself, here we go again. A lot of these soldiers are very young. The idea that your young person, your daughter, your son is going to be sent into the Army with its inherent risks. We all know being in the service can involve risks, but they should be coming from the enemy or from accidents or other things that happen. You'd like to think that the armed services are going to do their damnedest to make sure that your daughter or son is protected and provided with the best equipment and training and supervision available. Fort Hood is falling dramatically short here, and there's something wrong with this base, and this needs to be fixed. I was pleased to see Myra Guillen, Vanessa's sister, speak up. I saw in social media last week that initially she commented only briefly to say that she would not be saying anything publicly about this case. After a couple of days, she actually came back. So now this is only a couple of days ago. She came back on social media and said that so many people had asked her to please speak out and to please help shine the spotlight to what happened to Ana Basildúa Ruiz. She has agreed to take a look at the case and try to explore what's happening here and use her media spotlight to shine what sounds like a much needed spotlight into some pretty dark corners of the United States Army.
I think it's great that she's willing to do that. Now, one thing that I was very surprised by when I was reading up on some of the reporting on this is that, in December of 2021, the I Am Vanessa Guillen Act was signed into law. It said that one of the things that the I Am Vanessa Guillen Act did was it criminalized sexual harassment under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. I had no idea that in 2021 that still needed to happen. Like, I didn't know that wasn't already something that you weren't supposed to do under the Uniform Code of Justice. I had no idea. I can't believe it took until 2021 to do it.
I was surprised as well.
It does say as part of the Vanessa Guillen Act, which does a number of different things, it does criminalize harassment under the Uniform Code of Justice. It also says that the act improved how certain officials respond to sex-related offenses through independent investigations, and it removed the decision to prosecute sexual misconduct cases from the service member's chain of command. I'm not sure I understand what that third part means, though. Can you shed any light on that, knowing that you're from a military family?
Under the old structure, a decision to pursue sexual harassment complaints, allegations, would have been conducted through the chain of command. And that's probably not appropriate in 2023. You need to have independent investigators who are not part of the service branch chain of command. Because it's so easy for higher-ups, for example, to pressure people who are reporting to them to drop charges or minimize charges. That's where that change is probably one for the better.
All right. Now that you've explained it that way, I understand. So it does look like the investigation into that death is ongoing. And as we hear more information, we will, of course, report it to you all. Our second true crime news story is one that I think we both saw with no small amount of satisfaction, and that is on Friday, March 10th, Paul Flores was sentenced to 25 years to life without the possibility of parole for the 1996 murder of Kristen Smart. So glad to hear this.
Hallelujah. This is way overdue.
Yeah, Paul Flores is 46 now, by the way, and he murdered Kristen Smart when they were in college. So he has been walking around a free man for far longer than he deserved. So for anybody who may not be familiar with the case, Paul Flores was a student with Kristen Smart at Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo. Paul Flores was the last person to see Kristen Smart alive, and he's long been the prime suspect in her disappearance and probable murder. She ultimately had to be declared legally dead in 2002, but her body has never been discovered. Renewed attention was really brought to the Kristen Smart case in 2019 with the launch of the podcast Your Own Backyard, and that is from journalist Chris Lambert. And incidentally, as I was signing on to my phone to look at my notes for this episode, I got a notification that Your Own Backyard has downloaded a new episode.
Those are always worth listening to. And Chris Lambert, who started out as a musician and then ended up feeling like this case, which had been around in his hometown of San Luis Obispo for decades, really needed another look. And it's amazing what Chris and his cohorts have done with Your Own Backyard. This case should have never dragged on this way. As you mentioned, Paul Flores was suspect number one from the very beginning. And even the name of Chris Lambert's podcast, Your Own Backyard, is a direct reference to the fact that there were long-held suspicions which proved to be legitimate that Kristen Smart's body was actually hidden in the Flores backyard for a period of time.
Yeah, the Smart family has credited Chris Lambert with, quote, shining a spotlight in our darkest hours by sharing Kristen's voice and story. I didn't know as much about the case as you did. I brought myself up to speed quite quickly by listening to Your Own Backyard. I believe that was during the pandemic when I was taking a massive amount of walks around my neighborhood and listening to podcasts. So I think I must have walked 10, 15 miles, not all in one day, but combined listening to Your Own Backyard. He did a masterful job with that podcast. And I'm so happy to see that this has come to fruition finally. You and I were both discussing with Sarah Weinman the other day the fact that we hate the word closure. And I saw some of the reporting here all say, oh, this is wonderful closure for the Smart family.
I don't think so.
No, because they still don't have her body. How can it possibly be closure for them when they don't know where she is?
It's worth noting that the father of Paul Flores, Ruben Flores, was accused of assisting his son in moving Smart's body from under the deck of their home in Arroyo Grande, which is a beautiful town not far away from San Luis Obispo. And they think that she was there for years. It now appears that father and son moved the body and have hidden it somewhere else. And that it also appears from everything I've read that Paul Flores' father, Ruben, and his mother probably were active participants in hiding Kristen Smart's body.
That blows my mind.
Yeah, the whole thing, I feel the same way. It's amazing. In some interviews with his mother, she's referred to Kristen Smart and Kristen Smart's remains in the oddest, most distanced language possible. Mm-hmm. She spoke about her as if she weren't even a human being. It is tragic that even to this day, with Paul Flores being sent to jail for the rest of his life, he still never told the Smart family and, of course, law enforcement where her remains can be found.
And that reminded me of a couple of different nobody cases that we have had here in Virginia of Gina Renee Hall. Her killer, Stephen Epperle, has never admitted to where her remains are. And we know that if Randy Taylor is responsible for Samantha Clark's murder, he has never given up the location of her remains either. I guess it really is just the only form of control that these guys have left, is refusing to give up the location of their victim.
Lynn, as we've talked about with other experts, the idea of appealing to a killer's humanity, and I've mentioned this on air and spoken to you about this as well, it seems like these killers are so distanced from their own humanity, their own heart, that they can't seem to find a place inside themselves to even allow a family's pain to register upon them so that they would think, I'll tell these people this thing they want to know, which is where can we find our loved one so that we can bury them or treat them with the appropriate degree of respect. And yet some of these individuals are just so twisted that they can't seem to find it in themselves to tell these people what they're asking, which is not an unreasonable thing, which is, where did you hide the body?
Oh, it's awful. I was interested to note, I ran across this in the Los Angeles Times. I hadn't heard this particular little tidbit, but I think it's interesting. Paul Flores' defense attorney, Robert Sanger, went out of his way to point out that Scott Peterson, murderer of his wife, Lacey, and their son, Connor, was also a student at Cal Poly at the same time that Kristen Smart and Paul Flores attended it. So he made a case that Scott Peterson was probably responsible for the murder of Kristen Smart. That's a novel defense. It's not true, I don't think, but it's novel.
But unless you can build a case around that, you're not just going to be able to say, oh, it was Scott Peterson, and point your finger at this other convicted murderer.
Yeah.
Sorry, that doesn't work.
No, interesting that he gave it a shot, though. I don't think there was going to be any really good defense that Paul Flores could have.
The problem for his defense attorney, Mr. Sanger, is that he's defending his client who's guilty as hell.
Yep.
He can try all he wants. Oh, it wasn't my client. It was that other guy who's also involved in a very high-profile murder. And by the way, San Luis Obispo, which is a gorgeous place that Pamela and I have vacationed at numerous times, is not exactly murder central. It's this gorgeous town on the Central California coast. It's not a big place. Cal Poly is probably among the leading employers in town. It's an absolutely wonderful place. I'll bet the list of unsolved murders in the town of San Luis Obispo is pretty short.
I'm wondering if somebody out there is going to try to run the odds and figure out what are the odds of two very high profile murderers attending the same university at the same time at the same year. I am interested in that little bit. I guess that's probably no better than trivia. It is interesting. Paul Flores has been sentenced 25 years to life. Interestingly enough, though, his father, Ruben, was found not guilty of being an accessory to Christian Smart's murder. So he will continue to live out the rest of his years as a free man. Paul Flores, thankfully, is now behind bars. 25 to life, no possibility of parole.
Sadly, it's worth noting that if Paul Flores had been properly charged way back in 1996 or so, a number of sexual assaults that he was involved in over the years would have been prevented. Flores was charged in a number of other rapes and sexual assaults. He was suspected of using date rape techniques, drugging women that he met in bars in San Luis Obispo, and then he later relocated down to the Los Angeles area, and he lived in San Pedro, California. This pattern of his drugging and raping women continued on for two decades. This guy should have been in jail since the late 90s.
We are glad to see that justice has finally been served, and I think we all are looking forward to the day when we do get news that Christian Smart's body has been located, and we're hoping that day does come for the Smart family. According to reporting from the Los Angeles Times, prosecutor Christopher Peverell stated, after nearly 27 years of unspeakable anguish, the Smart family has finally seen their daughter's killer sentenced. Their strength and determination serves as an inspiration to us all.
You're listening to Mind Over Murder. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsors.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
We're back here at Mind Over Murder.
And in another We Hope Justice Is About to Be Done story, this one is related to our recent episode on the Murdoch murders. It turns out that the family of Stephen Smith has raised enough money via GoFundMe to pay for an exhumation and an independent autopsy. And that is according to reporting from NPR. For those of you who may have missed the Murdoch murders or are reporting on it, we'll do a quick recap here. Stephen Smith, 19, was found dead in the middle of the road near Moselle, which is the hunting state for Alec Murdoch, in 2015. Now, the crime initially was categorized as a hit and run, but the documentary series Murdoch Murders, A Southern Scandal, points out Stephen Smith's body doesn't actually show the hallmarks of someone who's been hit by a car. For one thing, he was right in the middle of the road. His shoes were still on his feet. His phone was unbroken in his pocket. There was no damage or debris near him to indicate that he'd been hit by a car. It just seemed a little too perfect and pat. But the investigation, and I'm curious how much of an investigation into this there actually was. You know what I'm saying?
Not enough. especially since more than 40 people had approached law enforcement with information that there were heavy rumors that Buster and perhaps Paul Murdoch were involved in the murder of Stephen Smith. Stephen Smith, of course, was a classmate and schoolmate of Buster's. Mm-hmm. And there was pretty persistent rumor that Buster may have been involved sexually with Stephen Smith, who was openly gay.
It is interesting to me that the investigation did not go into the amount of inconsistencies that there are between someone who's hit by a car and what actually happened to Stephen Smith. People who are hit by a car do not typically only have damage to their head. They said it looked like Stephen Smith had been clubbed over the head and then left in the roadway. If you're hit by a car, there's typically more physical damage to you, especially if the car is going fairly quickly. It was interesting to me that there just didn't seem to have been a lot of thought put into this investigation for Stephen Smith. But as a result of the recent court activities surrounding Alec Murdaugh, the Smith family decided that they would start a GoFundMe page to raise money for an exhumation and a private autopsy. So they raised $60,000. There is now going to be the exhumation and a private autopsy to see what, if anything, can be gleaned from Stephen's body.
It will also be interesting to see if the last count I saw was 48 different people had said they had additional information regarding this accident involving Stephen Smith. Not one of them had any inquiries from law enforcement, nor had anyone from the Murdoch family ever been interviewed by law enforcement. The shocking thing about the Netflix series, The Murdoch Murders, A Southern Scandal, was how much the Murdoch family got away with, including apparently up to and including murder. It's obviously time for that to stop. And these cases that surround this family, both the potential murder of Stephen Smith and, of course, the unsolved death of their housekeeper, Gloria Satterfield, both of these things need to be looked at. And there's a possibility that Buster, the older son, may be directly involved in Stephen Smith's murder.
It is interesting. In the reporting, it said that a South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, or SLED, stated 2 years ago, when it started looking into Alec Murdoch, that they would look into Smith's death, quote, based upon information gathered during the course of the double murder investigation of Paul and Maggie Murdoch. They've had it on their radar for a while, but after 2 years, and no says, I think it's great that the Smith family decided, you know what? It's time to do something about it for ourselves, because you clearly can't trust SLED to do the job that they are supposed to be doing. Hats off to them for being willing to just go after it with a GoFundMe page. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what they are able to tell from Stephen Smith's body.
We look forward to hearing more on that case, and we'll bring you more information on that, as well as the mysterious death of Gloria Satterfield, their housekeeper, which also deserves a significantly higher degree of attention than it's received so far.
I'm hoping that'll be the next thing that we hear coming down the news pipeline.
We've had a lot of interest in the October 22nd accidental shooting on the set of the film Rust, shooting in Santa Fe, New Mexico. You may recall that the film's star and producer, Alec Baldwin, discharged a prop firearm, a revolver, that hit cinematographer Helena Hutchins and director Joel Souza, who was also injured while filming this movie back in October. There have been some interesting twists and turns in the past few weeks. The most significant is that Andrea Reeb, who was the special prosecutor appointed to pursue charges against Alec Baldwin and head armorer Hannah Gutierrez Reed, they were accused of involuntary manslaughter, particularly in regards to the death of cinematographer Helena Hutchins. It now appears that Andrea Reeb has been forced to resign because she is acting as both a prosecutor and also a New Mexico state legislator. This represents a pretty serious conflict of interest. There were already problems because the prosecution had been forced to drop a five-year sentencing enhancement that would have resulted in a significantly higher jail sentence for both Alec Baldwin and Hannah Gutierrez Reed had they been found guilty. Oddly, the law, it was found, did not apply at the time of Hutchins' death. I have no idea why this research wasn't done before the charges were filed. I actually thought that was embarrassing. I'm not an attorney, but you file charges only to discover, oh, that law wasn't in effect at the time of the cinematographer's death. It just seemed really sloppy. Reeb was hired last August by Mary Carmack Altwees, who is the Santa Fe district attorney. She was supposed to head up the prosecution, but I think Reeb is probably a poor choice in that she was also elected in November as a Republican member of the State House of Representatives. I don't like for politics to enter into potential manslaughter investigation and perhaps conviction, but Baldwin's been a very outspoken Democrat. I think this is a very poor choice to have someone who is running for political office also trying this case. And Baldwin's lawyer successfully made the point that she couldn't serve both as a lawmaker and a prosecutor due to the separation of powers provision of the New Mexico State Constitution. I think they're right in this example. So she ended up stepping down. She tried an interim step where she had recused herself from voting on the state budget because it included $360,000 in tax incentives for the production of Rust. As we've talked about here before, there are states around the country, New Mexico included, that provide tax incentives to attract projects like Rust. They want them to come and bring the jobs and tax base that they generate. There's a hearing on Baldwin's attorney's motions to disqualify Ms. Reeb, but she's already stepped down as prosecutor, so I think that may be a moot point. And so she said, quote, "After much reflection, I've made the difficult decision to step down as special prosecutor in the Rust case," Reeb said in a statement. "My priority in this case, and in every case I've prosecuted in my 25-year career, has been justice for the victim." I get it. It doesn't end up looking very good because of all of these conflicts of interest.
Interestingly enough, the person who appointed her, Carmack Altwees, defended her appointment by stating there isn't case law that forbids her from doing both things at the same time. There's like, there's nothing that says you can't be a lawmaker and a prosecutor. But I agree with you. It is a conflict of interest, and it's not a good look. As the youth today say, it's not a good look. She does make a great point. She says, "I will not allow questions about my serving as a legislator and prosecutor to cloud the real issue at hand, which is the facts which clearly show a complete disregard for basic safety protocols that led to the death of Helena Hutchins." And that really is what's at issue here. So I actually think it's a good look for her to go ahead and step
up. And the appearance of impropriety, I think, is the thing you have to be concerned about.
Yeah.
Whether we call it a good look or not, it really smacks of potential problems to have someone who is prosecuting but also appears to be a bit of an interested party.
I was interested in this article that you sent me to note that she did receive some donations from people who are actually involved with the case. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and just read the full quote here. "During her campaign for state representative, Reeb received a $250 donation from Lisa Turrell, attorney who represented David Halls in the case. Halls' investigator, W. Dennis Mays, also gave $500 to her campaign. Halls, the first AD who was in charge of set safety on Rust, was allowed to plead no contest to a misdemeanor and will not serve jail time. All involved have denied that the campaign contributions played any role in the outcome, though Taracho said she thought Reeb should step down from the case after taking it." There still feels like a little bit of, it feels a little improper here.
I cringed when I read that. Couldn't believe that the attorney and the investigator were stupid enough to make campaign contributions to this prosecutor after she had pretty much let David Halls slide. He could have been charged with much more serious offenses. He was the person that actually handed Alec Baldwin the gun and said out loud, cold gun, which was not accurate. And he actually was responsible overall for set safety. He got off with a very light slap on the wrist. He had cooperated with the prosecutors, which probably was beneficial. But I thought these campaign contributions were a very poor choice.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and do the English teacher quote and say something feels rotten in the state of Denmark here. It's not a great look.
There's one other odd thing about the reporting here, which indicates that Reeb made two appearances on Fox following the announcement of charges in the Rust case. And she appeared on Sean Hannity's show, which is a political show. Though she said that political factors played no role in her decision to bring charges. I'm not saying they did play a role, but I find it very odd that she appears on Fox News, which has a very strong conservative, Republican, right-wing bent, on Hannity's show, which is a political show, and then on that show she says, oh, but political factors played no role here. Again, I think there's a lot of really inappropriate decisions made here and just terrible judgment.
It does look like there's still more twists and turns to come in the Rust saga. And of course, we'll continue to keep everybody apprised of all of those as this continues to unfold. I'm sure there's going to be a whole lot more about this before we've heard the last from Alec Baldwin and Hannah Gutierrez Reed.
We're also working on an upcoming episode of Mind Over Murder where we'll be trying to give you an update on what's going on with the Colonial Parkway murders. We are seeing some slow progress, and we'd like to give you an update on what's going on with that to the extent that we can. So that'll be coming up in the next few weeks on Mind Over Murder.
That's going to do it for this episode of Mind Over Murder and True Crime News Roundup. If you have comments on any of the stories that we've shared, please make sure that you share them on our social media page by hitting the comment button. And if you like what we are doing here with the podcast, please do leave us a 5-star rating or review on all of your podcast channels. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
Mind Over Murder is a production of Absolute Zero and Another Dog Productions.
Our executive producers are Bill Thomas and Kristen Dilley.
Our logo art is by Pamela Arnois.
Our theme music is by Kevin MacLeod.
Mind Over Murder is distributed in partnership with Crawl Space Media.
You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.
You can also follow our page on the Colonial Parkway Murders on Facebook.
And finally, you can follow Bill Thomas on Twitter at BillThomas56.
Thank you for listening to Mind Over Murder.